You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Tour de France in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we are in Serre Chevalier.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in our little apartment in the Alps. No, where are we?
Saint-Chaffré.
Between Briançon, where the stage starts tomorrow, and Serre Chevalier, where the stage finished this evening.
We're actually in Serre Chevalier because it's kind of a resort that, you know, it's a kind of a cluster of little villages, and the all of it is a ski resort known as Serre Chevalier. So one of the villages is Saint-Chaffré.
And you used to holiday here, Francois?
Yeah, I spent many, many years there, you know, here as a would-be skier for many, many years. So yeah, I know the place well.
Well,
your parents had a holiday home.
Yeah,
just by
the finish line. It's a pity they sold it because we could have been, you know, just on the balcony in front of the finish line, typing our stories, taking pictures, and podcasting in live.
How many rooms are there? Because Richard's on the sofa this evening, aren't you?
Yeah. How did that happen exactly?
Well, you just told me to take the double bed, so I did. I mean, well
you know. Anyway, I'm feeling a little bit queasy actually because I spent the day in a team car, and mountain stages in a team car do leave one feeling slightly queasy because
car sickness and lack of lunch.
Well, I had lunch. I had a sandwich, but it was you learn what the limits of the car are on these descents, shall we say. And it was pretty hairy at times. I have to.
What you mean is that our car is not a team car.
In every sense of the word, our car is not a team car. Anyway, I was with Cannondale Drapac. Interesting day for them. It was a good day to be with them. My day with Cannondale Drapac will be released as a friend special next week.
Excellent.
So listen out for that. It was a good day to be with them because they had a couple riders up in the break. They had a couple of riders involved in the early crash with Marcel Kittel. There was a lot going on today. It was dramatic. And, of course, at the end, Rigoberto Urán was second on the stage to climb up to second overall. I'm doing the tail of the tap here, Lionel. I'm stealing your thunder. I didn't really know any of this as the stage was unfolding because it's hard to actually follow what's happening in the race when you're in a team car.
Well, we did manage to follow the race just about today. So stage 17 of the Tour de France from Lamur to Serre Chevalier, 183 kilometres into the Alps. Not a summit finish. There was a big descent off the Col du Galibier down into Serre Chevalier. And it was the former ski jumper, Primoz Roglic of Team Lotto NL Jumbo, who won, becoming the first Slovenian to win a stage of the Tour de France. A really impressive climb and descent for him. There was a lot of other drama going on. Emmanuel Macron, the French president, was on the tour today.
Where did he finish?
He had the canapés and probably a glass of wine.
He actually appeared right in front of us on the course in a car. We were following Contador as he was bridging up to the group. That was quite thrilling. And we were pulled in, and there were lots of security buzzing around. And then this car appeared from the side, and it was Emmanuel Macron.
Well, as you mentioned, Richard, the early drama in the stage was that Marcel Kittel, winner of five stages, wearing the green jersey, crashed, and he later abandoned the race. So that has meant that Michael Matthews of Team Sunweb is now leading the points competition with only a few days to go to Paris. He has a big lead over André Greipel in that competition. Other riders to pull out today included Thibaut Pinot of Francis Desjeux. They're now down to only three riders. Francois and I were joking about whether they still need the team bus now. They could just have a team car to transport the riders to the start.
I'll do the joke again. You know, there are more Maggios in the race, you know, than riders.
They can almost get away with a motorbike and a sidecar.
Unfortunately, also, Dan McClay is out of the race. He's been struggling in recent days, and today was a bridge too far for him. He was lying last overall, no longer. Now Luke Rowe is the last man overall. But as you said, Richard, it was the battle for the GC that got really interesting on the Col du Galibier. And the big story was that Fabio Aru was distanced, and he lost 31 seconds despite a furious chase down the descent, he slipped to fourth place overall. Rigoberto Urán won the sprint for second from that group, which had obviously Chris Froome, Romain Bardet, Warren Barguil and Mikel Landa in it. So Urán took the time bonus and he's now tied on time with Romain Bardet. They're both 27 seconds behind Chris Froome. Another rider to have a slightly bad day was Simon Yates, really his first bad day of the tour. He lost a couple of minutes. Nairo Quintana's topsy-turvy tour continued. At one stage, he was off the front with Alberto Contador, who rode very well today, but Quintana then slipped back and he lost 7 minutes, so his chances of finishing in the top 10 seem to be gone. So Chris Froome in yellow, Michael Matthews in green, Warren Barguil still in the King of the Mountains, and Simon Yates in white. Tomorrow, it's the finish on the Col d'Izoard, and we will find out there whether Chris Froome's going to go into the time trial in Marseille with an overall lead.
Well, it certainly looks that way. He looks pretty strong. It was, I couldn't watch the stage really, but I did see that the break, and I saw Contador coming up to the break. It was very impressive, the speed with which he bridged that gap. He jumped away at the foot of the Croix de Fer with Quintana, and no sooner really had we heard that he was on the way than we were asked in the team cars to pull into the side. So because there were 30 odd riders in the break, so there were a lot of team cars there. That's a big convoy, and Contador appeared and made his way up. One of his teammates, Michael Gogol, the Austrian rider, dropped back to pace him, which Trek played a blinder really. They had three men in that move. Jonathan Pantano, who had a terrible crash the day before, did a power work when Contador was there, and Bauke Mollema, of course. So very good strategy by them. I was in the team car kind of deal with Ken Van Mark, Sepp Van Mark's brother, who said he'd been speaking to Trek the previous day on the rest day, and they were saying that Contador still thought he could win the tour. He started the day 7 minutes down, and he still thought he could win the tour. And, you know, you didn't know whether that effort today was just to try and win the stage, but maybe not. You know, I mean, audacious, ambitious, and ultimately it failed. But, you know, Contador is somebody who makes bike races exciting.
That is Contador, though, isn't it? He won't give up, and even when it looks like a completely lost cause, he will have a go.
Unfortunately, it's probably lost cause. I mean, we've seen, you know, revivals, resurrections. I mean, Roger Federer just won Wimbledon, but it's difficult, really, to see Contador, as much as we would love to see him win a stage or be a serious contender in the Grand Tour again. Really, every time he's been trying. I mean, he's trying to be the pistolero, you know, but he's kind of firing, you know, dummy bullets these days, unfortunately.
His mind is writing checks that his body can't cash. I think I used that line at the Vuelta last year, but it still applies. I think 2015 Giro was the last of the best of Contador, I think, perhaps.
Well, what about the man of the day, the stage winner, Primoz Roglic?
Mm. In my fantasy tour team.
And mine also.
Finally, so comes good.
Might look up and see how my team's
getting
on. So was
Kittel.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We've lost Kittel as well. Oh, well, never mind. We'll see how our standings are getting on. I think I've given up my fantasy team. Napalm's Andouillette have misperformed this year, if indeed that's a word. But Roglic was, he was very impressive. Team Lotto NL Jumbo have had a fairly mixed tour. They lost Robert Hessink before the real climbing really even started in this race. And then, of course, George Bennett was riding extremely well, was high up the overall standings until he got ill and abandoned the race yesterday. At the finish, I spoke to Nico Verheugen, who is the sports director for Team Lotto NL Jumbo, and I asked him about how much planning had gone into this stage.
After losing George Bennett yesterday, this is a perfect result for the tour for the team today.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's really unbelievable that we win today. We had a plan already a few days for this stage, because this was a perfect stage for Primoz. And it's incredible that he did what we dreamed about. And also he was dreaming about this stage. And then it's unbelievable that he went.
Did you have in mind this stage because of the descent? I don't want to make the obvious joke because of his background as a ski jumper, but he's obviously good going downhill.
Yeah, he was here in holidays. He did the Alps on his holiday. There was not a training camp. He was holiday and he had rest week. And then he went to the Alps. with his girlfriend, and he was and he saw also this stage and also the descent. Because he was already planned in May that he that it was one of the goals, one of the dream stages for him.
Were you confident when he reached the top that he had enough of a gap? Were you worried about the headwind in the finish?
It's always dangerous, you never know. And he had, with 1K to go to the top, he had 2 minutes 15 on Froome. And on the top he had 1 minute 35. So then in that kilometer he lost a lot of time. Because the group favourites, they were attacking there and they dropped Aru. And then in the first 5 to 10K, you don't know how much he will lose. And then he loses only 5 seconds in the first 10K. And then you know, it's when he don't crash or don't have the flat one, it must be in the pocket because he's losing almost nothing.
And just a quick word on George Bennett. He was having such a great tour up until falling ill. I mean, it's very disappointing for him, but how do you assess the 2 weeks he had here?
George is it's a wonderful guy. He's also a very good bike rider, and he showed last year in the Vuelta that he can do top 10. And also he was competing with the best 10 riders in the mountain stages, and he was top 10. And when he was in that spot, he looked forward to these two stages. But in the end, when we came out of the Pyrenees, he got a little bit sick, and then he had 2 days that he was suffering. And before the rest day, he had a very bad day, and then we were hoping that that on the rest day that he can recover. But it was not more than hoping, because then he got sick in the afternoon, and the day after, it was still okay, looks okay. But when you are 1 day a little bit sick, you don't recover, and then he was really bad on his bike, and then he had to stop.
Do you think we'll see him at the Vuelta, or do you not know his plans yet?
Normally the plan was that he will do the Vuelta, but now we don't know it's how fast he recovers. But normally he will recover soon, I think. We hope, we don't know, but then he will do the Vuelta also.
Hey, I'm Ryan, and I'm the Rafa Cycling Club coordinator in San Francisco. You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits, and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Yes, thank you indeed to Rafa, our very generous, kind sponsors. A reminder that throughout the month of July, they are running a climbing theme, Rafa Rising. And also a reminder that if you are not in France at the Tour de France, there's still a few days left of the great race. And the best place to watch it is on the big screens at your local Rafa clubhouse. Find out more at rafa.cc/Rafa Rising. Now, Rafa also produced a wonderful Pedaleur de Charme kit, the cycling jersey, the cap, and the t-shirt this morning. By order of the Pedaleur de Charme jury, I presented Juan Alfredo with that just blatant favouritism. We like Juan Alfredo. He's entertained us this tour. Yeah. We felt he deserved the Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt. So I went and gave him one. He obliged by removing his helmet, which not a lot of riders do, including Rigoberto Urán. Looked very impassive in helmet and sunglasses and as he sported his Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt or held it in front of him. But Juan Alfredo, very grateful for his. I reckon he'll probably wear it.
He'll probably wear it. Yeah.
He probably will wear it. Anyway, he was grateful for that. We have just tonight launched this week's final Pedaleur de Charme poll of this Tour de France, and the contenders are Warren Barguil again, but lots of nominations for him. Alberto Contador, lots of nominations for him. Tony Martin, some nominations for him for pushing his countryman Marcel Kittel after the crash. They are not teammates, although they might be next year, if rumours are to be believed that Kittel will go to Katusha Alpecin, is the rumour. Anyway, he pushed him after the crash. That was nice to see, good sportsmanship. And Michał Kwiatkowski of Team Sky, just for his incredible work for Chris Froome at Team Sky. As things stand, it's been open about half an hour only, and there are 400 votes, and Barguil is narrowly ahead, with Contador and Kwiatkowski close behind, and Tony Martin lagging behind. So vote on Twitter, the poll is there, and we'll make the award on Friday or Saturday. We heard before the break there from Nico Verhoeven from Lotto Jumbo NL. And yeah, Roglic is, when you feel with him that there's still a lot to come. You know, he's not a young rider in particular, but he's young in cycling terms, in cycling years. And, you know, he's shown flashes of outstanding form where he's even looked the match of the very top guys. And I actually thought he might do something absolutely sensational at this tour, which is why I put him in my fantasy team. He hasn't done that, but I think there is a lot more to come from him.
Well, once again, we have kind of a Tom Dumoulin replica because, you know, he was known as a time trial specialist and all of a sudden we find he's a great climber. So we seem there seems to be a new generation to emerge of these tall, you know, solid riders who you'd think would be more fitted for time trials and actually climb very well. So, well, beware of this guy in the future. When he tackled the descent, he didn't lose any time at all. We were thinking that he might, you know, all of a sudden take a ski jumping position, put his pedals in a V shape.
If anyone's going to go well going downhill, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was amazing, very surprising. I mean, it's nice in a way to see a different type of climbers emerge in, you know, with Dumoulin now, this guy. Really a rider to follow.
Well, as Verhoeven said, Roglic had wrecked this descent, and you know, he was fading quite a bit towards the top of the climb because the GC riders behind Romain Bardet made a few accelerations. Warren Barguil was riding strongly at that point as well. That was trimming the lead down. But once Roglic got over the top with he got over the top and then defended that advantage, really only lost sort of a handful of seconds.
Yeah, it was about 130 down on the descent. Yeah, that's right.
But the impressive bit was the flatter bit where we gather it was slight headwind as well. And you have to bear in mind, this is only his second season at this level. He was riding for a small team in 2014 and 2015. We really came to our attention at the Giro d'Italia last year when he won the time trial in Chianti in terrible conditions. Got a little bit fortunate with the weather that day because the riders who went off later had even worse conditions than he'd had. But this year, his stage race performances have been really impressive. He's won the Tour of the Algarve. He was fourth at Tirreno Adriatico, fifth at the Tour of the Basque Country, third at the Tour of Romandy, and then second at the ZLM Tour in the Netherlands. Okay, that's a fairly small stage race, but some of the others are high level. And I share Richard's view that had things gone a little bit differently early on in the tour, you know, Roglic could have been one of those kind of Damiano Caruso types riding his way into the sort of top 10, 12 positions. And really, it was only because of George Bennett's outstanding performances that, Roglic has been off the radar a bit until today.
Yeah, credits to Lotto Jumbo NL as well, because they're the kind of Aymeric Subeldia of the team competition. We never mentioned them, and they're always there producing new riders of interest. As you said, George Bennett, Roglic, Robert Hessing, we've known him from quite a while. But when you look at it afterwards, they had three.
Kreuzvik.
Kreuzvik, yeah, they got great riders, and we very often don't talk about them. So, credits to the team as well.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport. Very grateful to them for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast throughout the year. Something we haven't mentioned yet, but something you can take advantage of with Science and Sport is their Premier Delivery Service. If you sign up for SIS Premier for £9.99, you get unlimited next-day delivery, early access to new products, world-class nutrition advice, and a free gift worth £28. For more information, people can go to scienceandsport.com/thecyclingpodcast. So do that and sign up to their Premier Delivery Service. Now, we've got lots more to talk about as regards today. You guys will have to fill me in on a lot of this. Although, I was saying to you earlier, Lionel, I mean, one of the big stories of the day, obviously, is Marcel Kittel and what happened to him. I mentioned that two Cannondale riders were involved in that crash, I believe, Taylor Finney and Nate Brown. I'm not even sure to this day to this hour to this minute whether they were actually involved in the crash, but it came over the radio that they were, and they were attended to, and Taylor Finney certainly had a big gash on his arm, so he obviously came off. But you know, when you're in the team cars, you're following the race like that, and you arrive at the scene of a crash, and this was a big one. There were bottles, there was bikes, there were bodies lying, you know, hurting, and you have much more of a sense of the rawness of it, the horror of it, really. And it's quite affecting. It's sanitized when you see it on television.
Yeah, because as we were traveling along the Oar course towards the finish, you know, periodically checking what was going on in the race, you've got no sense of how serious that crash was. You just saw, well, Kittel's down, and then probably 45 minutes later, Kittel's out of the race. And I think, yeah, you do forget that when they crash hard, and you know, cuts and bruises, you know, they sting. They, you know, in some cases the riders get badly hurt. But I think with Kittel today, you know, that I think the last couple of days he's not been 100%. There's rumours of a bug sweeping through the Quickstep team and parts of the peloton. But that always happens in the third week of the tour, doesn't it? Immune systems are being pushed to their very limits, and you know, the peloton is like a sort of you know, a primary school classroom where you know, a bug just goes round as quickly as that. And
a few of them have got nits, apparently.
Well, I'm sure Marcel Kittel with his hair would never get nits.
No, never.
But it's a real shame for Kittel, because really he had that green jersey sewn up. 5 stage wins, a couple of days ago a huge lead. Yesterday that lead was significantly eaten into by Michael Matthews, and now all of a sudden Matthews, who in his own way has ridden a brilliant tour, not just in winning the 2 stages but also in all the other work he's done to help his teammate Warren Barguil, here we are a few days now from Paris, and Sunweb are probably going to end up with the green jersey and the polka dot jersey. I mean, I would say almost certainly.
And 3 stages as well.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Yeah, they did a great job. About Kittel, well, you know, Brian Holm, whom I talked to at the finish, was not really certain what happened. He mentioned as well that, you know, it might be the crash, maybe something else. Maybe a reminder that very often when you're in a bad way, it's often when you crash. You know, you're not as vigilant. You're, you know, you're not on your guards as much. And really, we could tell for the last couple of days that Marcel Kittel was not doing so well. Well, again, credits to Michael Matthews, who's riding a fantastic Tour de France. He was again in the front with Thomas de Gendt in the beginning of the stage today. What a fantastic tour! Ala Sagan is riding, but maybe we'll listen to Brian Holm talking about Marcel Kittel and Dan Martin as well, because we never forget Dan Martin.
What was wrong with Marcel today?
To be honest, I don't know. It could have been the crash. He could have been very hurt after the crash. After the crash, I just thought he was fine. I didn't know really what happened. I'd say better after the. I got my impression was he really didn't recover. You know, there was a bit of illness after the rest day in the team, and we knew yesterday already would be quite. So we were prepared for a very tough day yesterday with the whole team. Gilbert went home, and when we started yesterday morning, I did feel a little bit we could be like light version of Francais de Jure with 4 riders left there. So end of the day, we was even happy yesterday. And like. Today, everybody wants us to feel sorry. I mean, I'm sorry for Marcel. He could have won Champs-Élysées the green, but I think the team performed well. We won 5 stages. Nobody ever expected us to do that. I mean, at least I didn't. We're quite humble. We always try to win stages. It's the world's best cyclist here. So we I feel very sorry for Marcel. He's a fantastic guy. He's a good team player. But I'm also very happy for Dan Martin. I think he was a big part of creating the race today. He for sure. He really came back in the race, and okay, I admit he went out again on the descent, but that's life also. He's trying, and I think what's making him a good cyclist. We never tried to stop him or tell him what to do. He's sort of just following his head, and I think that's very nice.
On his current form, Dan could be to be a factor tomorrow again.
Let's hope so. If we've had the same legs, for sure he's going to continue. He can tell you he's not really calculating weight of cycling he's doing, so he could be a factor, because he was really flying today. And let's hope we got the diamond slugs back tomorrow, eh? Then we're all happy. Yeah?
I feel for Dan Martin today because he was aggressive, not just once or twice, but several times on the Galibier, tried to stretch it out, tried to probably pinch a few more seconds, but then found himself on the back foot and ended up losing 30 seconds today. And he slipped down only one place, I think, but he slipped down the overall. But I think much rather see a rider trying and you know, conceding time than just sitting in the group and riding round. Having said that, Rigoberto Urán, people are saying, well, he didn't attack, he didn't make any moves on the climb, and Romain Bardet did, and so, you know, Bardet rode aggressively and Urán rode defensively. But if you're looking at the remainder of the tour altogether, Urán played it absolutely perfectly today. Today was not his day to try and do something. I think if he's going to try and put a bit of distance between himself and Bardet tomorrow, that, you know, that might well be on the cards. You never know. Those two have got a real conundrum tonight to work out what they're going to do, because is there much likelihood that they can unseat Chris Froome enough to give themselves a chance of winning the tour in the time trial? I would say that's very unlikely, unless, you know, Chris Froome and Team Sky have some unforeseen meltdown on the Col d'Izoard. However, you know, there's still second place to play for, and you know, that's significant. That's absolutely significant.
And that's the problem. I mean, the two guys who really had a go today, Contador and Martin, ended up paying for it. You know, and that this is why we see riders riding quite conservatively. I don't want to sound critical, because Rigoberto Urán is riding exceptionally well. So is Romain Bardet, and he's having a go as well. But at the back of your mind, at the back of their minds, is the prestige, the honour, the riches that come with finishing on the podium. It's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing a reader actually, Michael Joyce, wrote an email to us pointing out something I didn't know, that Rigoberto Urán's bike was not permitted to be ridden in the time trial in Dusseldorf, and he had to change onto his spare bike. I asked Jonathan Vautis about that today, and I didn't know about it, but it was indeed true that he was on his spare bike. He wasn't on his favoured bike. It was something to do with the measurement was didn't conform with the UCI regulations. So that maybe threw him. We talk about him as a strong time trialist, but actually he's an erratic time trialist. He can be a strong time trialist, but he can also be pretty awful. And he lost a considerable amount of time that day. I mean, he lost 50 odd seconds, I think, without looking it up. It was about there. That in the time trial, and you know, without that, I'm talking about to Froome. You know, he's as you said, Lionel, he's ridden around France faster than Chris Froome,
and is riding conservatively.
Not really. That because time bonuses obviously come into.
But riding conservatively was probably the key. I was in the AG2R camp at the end of the stage. Funny, you know, you say on the race you don't know what's going on. I had a funny scene there. We had Cyril Gauthier was in a plastic tub, asking, you know, recovering. it was very strange, and he was asking his team director, Stéphane Goubert, what was going on, who was in the lead, the time gaps, because the riders don't know themselves. But you could tell frustration in the AG2R camp, because Romain Bardet attacked three or four times in the Galibier, and to no avail. I mean, it was, you know, it didn't bring him anything. If it did bring him something, is that in the final sprint, when they were all, I mean, the top GC contenders were battling down for, you know, bonus seconds, he actually finished fourth, and Urán and Froome took more seconds off him, and you could tell real frustration from the AG2R camp. They were saying, "It's, you know, we tried today." Obviously, they were putting lots of hope in that stage, and because tomorrow everybody expects Froome to, you know, probably wrap up the tour or seal victory, especially with the help of Landa. So yeah, maybe lost opportunities. As you said, Dan Martin attacked, he paid for it. Contador attacked, he paid for it. Bardet attacked, he paid for it. So in a way, attacking Sky proves, probably, you know, over-optimistic and counterproductive.
Stalemate.
But Romain Bardet, I see what they're saying. But, I mean, yeah, he got done on the line, really, by Chris Froome and lost out on a time bonus. And now he's tied on time with Urán. And Urán is ahead on better individual stage placings, isn't he? But, I mean, like I said before, Iran, he needed to keep his powder dry today and see what tomorrow brings. And I think, you know, Romain Bardet has still got an opportunity to attack on the Côte d'Ivoire and see what happens.
He will,
and it's set up absolutely fantastically, and we'll see all of these riders, you know, we'll see what they're made of and what they can you know, what they can conjure up. I think on two other things to note on the GC battle. First of all, Mikel Landa, I mean, he's ghosting there in fifth place, 124 down on his teammate Chris Froome, but looking so smooth on the climbs. I mean, he's almost taunting the others with how good he looks. Someone who's going the other way, and we did hear a little bit about this from Louis Menkes, who said in the first 10-12 days of the tour, Fabio Aru was climbing fantastically, but he looks like he's gone over the top of the.
That was really interesting what Menkes said, because it was a kilometer zero the other day, and he just said that there was that one stage that wasn't, you know, the massive central, not huge mountains, not a lot happened, but the riders know, don't they? They know, and he just saw that Aru was sort of, you know, over the top and on the way down. Just the way that he was riding, the way he was reacting, the way he seemed to be climbing that stage.
And not that he was going to have any Astana teammates there to help him, but when he was dropped, he was all on his own, ironically enough, with Menkes on his wheel, and then a group either came up to him or the people were coming back, and there was a slightly bigger group of them. But Aru, unfortunately for him, you know, I think he's probably lost his chance of finishing on the podium today.
Well, obviously there was strong denial of this of this way of thinking from the Astana camp. I spoke to Dimitri Fofanov this morning in French and tonight in English about Aru's chances. He pointed out quite rightly that, you know, he actually lost Cataldo and Jakob Fuglsang, who were his two main aides, you know, in the Dauphiné when Fuglsang won it, and it was a big loss, and now he's kind of on his own. But today, every time that the road was going up, he was dropped, trying to make it back on the descent. But still, Fofanov, you know, insists in his very, how could I say, you know, affirmative Russian English that Aru is, you know, fighting on, and that he will attack tomorrow. Let's listen maybe to Dimitri Fofanov.
So Dimitri today, Fabio lost a little bit of time, but he fought very hard. Every time in the climbs he was, you know, attacked, he came back. So what is the idea today? A little bit frustrated or what?
No, but it's actually a hard day today. I mean, so a lot of tactic today. Contador tried to attack from long way. Also Quintana don't stay with him, but don't in the end don't try to follow him in the race. And then it's okay. Fabio lose a little bit sometimes today, but. Okay, actually, it's not big catastrophe, because he say always in touch with the group of leaders. Okay, Bardet is very good day for him today. So it's a very good legs and free attacks also. So from also come back with Landa. He have actually good helper with him. It's okay. What we talk about also Uran always here respond in attack very well. Okay, tomorrow we are finishing the top. We are close to the podium. We are 53 seconds actually from Froome. Okay, but tomorrow I know Fabio, if he have a legs, he attack. He don't wait in the wheel, just sit and follow.
Finishing uphill like in the Izoard tomorrow, it's probably better for him than a stage like today for Fabio.
Sure it's different different for him. It's better because we saw in the past finish like that is better for him.
So victory is still possible, you think?
Victory is always possible. Nothing is not possible.
So that was Dimitri Fofanov from Team Astana. Just further to what I was saying earlier about Rigoberto Urán, he was 95th in that time trial in Düsseldorf, over a minute down on Geraint Thomas. And that, very costly, very, very costly, because Chris Froome hasn't been able to lose Iran at all. And who's to say that had he ridden a little bit better there, he would be in the yellow jersey, and it would have forced Froome to ride the race in a slightly different way, more aggressive way.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show that when you're approaching the end of 3 weeks, suddenly you can look back at all these events that looked, yeah, okay, that was significant. I mean, we would have, I can remember looking at Iran's performance in that time trial and thinking, well, he's not pinging, is he? He won't be a big factor. It was one of those kind of second division type GC riders of like, well, he didn't do enough to move himself into the top list of favourites for the race, and yet he's performed fantastically day in, day out since then. And that's, it always brings me back. I said it on the eve of the tour at the event we did in Dusseldorf, Laurent Fignon's phrase, whether it was originally him or not, I don't know, but the Tour de France is not a who done it, it's a how done it. And you can always look back from the end of the race and work out these little moments that suddenly much more significant looking back 2.5 weeks than perhaps they felt at the time.
Well, let's get to dinner, Lionel and Francois, because we're late tonight.
We are.
Because we bumped into David Miller and Ned Bolton, didn't we?
I mean, it's podcast ambush.
I think that might have been sabotage.
Maybe it was. Yeah,
because they'd recorded theirs, and then they came and bought us beer. And looking back now, we're very innocent. We're very naive.
Five rounds in 40 minutes, I think it was a trap.
You're exaggerating a little bit there. We're very naive. That was definitely deliberate, because we've got momentum in the iTunes charts, you know, and they're the Fabio Aru of the cycling podcast. I think we're definitely, what are we? We're Rigoberto Urán. We're
Dan Martin. We make fantastic gains, but then squander it all away on a day like today.
Well, I thought I had signed up for Team Sky, you know, joining you guys.
Easy, Francois. Easy.
Before
at least
we're
not Francis de Jure.
Before we go, let's just...
Although there are only three of us.
There's four.
who would have bet that we would finish with the same number of people in our team as Francis de Jure?
Well, we haven't reached the end yet. Let's not go. It could be a sudden abandon on the road tomorrow. Yeah.
Who would have thought, you know, just the last one, who would have thought I would make more money on this tour than Team Bahrain?
Oh dear. Well, before we go, just a few plugs for things that we've been doing this week. We released the first part of our two-part, what are we calling it? We're calling it Road Trip. The Road Trip. Offcuts, behind the scenes, stories that we can't say in the regular podcast.
For legal reasons.
And that is available for friends of the podcast. Do sign up. It's only £10 and you get a load of content spread across the whole year. Also, if you have signed up to the Friends of the Podcast scheme and you look on your iTunes feed or wherever and it's, you know, no longer showing the latest episodes, just delete your feed and sign on again, like basically re-add your feed, and it will should sort out any connectivity problems you might be having. A quick plug for Kilometre Zero. This morning's Kilometre Zero, I think, is probably the most enjoyable one we've ever made. It's called Tour de la Musique, and it's our homage to Jukebox Jury, some of the worst music I've ever heard, plus Kraftwerk's Tour de France.
And Francois,
of course.
We played out with Francois singing his own song about the Tour de France, and it's really
masterpiece.
Good.
Tour de France inspired music. We've also put all of the videos for those 10 songs on our own website, thecyclingpodcast.com. If you click on latest episodes and then click on Tour de la Musique, you can watch and listen to all of those songs. Tomorrow's Kilometre Zero is with Thierry Gouvenou, the man who plots the Tour de France route, so listen out for that.
That's relevant to the very close race that we've had. Is it because of the route? Perhaps we'll hear what Thierry Gouvenou has to say about it. For tonight, thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard. We need to go and get some hot melted cheese for dinner.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you, Richard.